Welcome back, Slashers and Survivor Girls. It's another fantastical episode of the Creepy Real Horrorcast. I'm Mistress Meg.
I'm that good buddy Lone Fox.
And the Haddonfield train just keeps on rolling. This week.
I don't have anything funny after this.
Yeah.
You're just beating me down. It's just.
I'm pretty sure that I had said that in another opening at some point, but. Mm-hmm. Some days feels, lately it's been feeling an awful lot like Groundhog's Day with the movies.
Yeah, it's.
We were,
You just hope and pray, and then all of a sudden, but god damn it, it's the same thing!
We're back watching Halloween. It's Halloween H20, or Halloween Water, or H2O if you're cultured.
Halloween Wagwa. As we like to say in the Beverly household.
Because we're all fucking weirdos. Anywho, before we get into the... Oh, dear Jesus.
Oh, this is going to be a good one. All right, guys, yeah.
So before we get into the episode, join us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Slasher at Creepin' It Real. You can subscribe, preferably, so you can get our podcast episodes every Tuesday.
Pretty nice.
In whatever your favorite podcatcher is. You can email us at creepinitreal.cm@gmail.com with movie suggestions, or if you just want to chat with Lunchbox, because he's the keeper of the email. And if you like us a whole bunch, and just a reminder, I know we're still a few months out. However, Christmas is coming, and you gotta allow for those shipping times. And if you really like us, you can get our merch at creepinitreal.redbubble.com. There's also a link in our Instagram bio, which you can just tap, tappity, tip, tap, tap. I am loopy.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Are you on drugs? Because you should be.
Allergy meds? I don't know how this is going to sound recorded, but I currently feel super, a little bit congested.
Oh, and I can't edit that out.
Nope. I'm going to sound nasally. Because...
I'm just hocked up on Mountain Dew.
Well, that's fortunate for you.
Code red.
I'm not. I'm hopped up on Flonase. Shut up. So, yes, if I sound a little nasally or if there's an odd sneeze that Lunchbox can't manage to edit out. Yeah, that's my life right now.
Deal with it.
So, Halloween H20. Laurie Strode is back.
Is she?
She kind of.
Kind
of? Under an alias.
Mm.
The alias Carrie Tate. Before we get into that, though, I am going to give you some of the information, the basic information on that. Halloween H20 dropped August 5th, 1998, which was just a few days before my 13th birthday, because I'm old. It was made for a budget of about $17 million. It ended up grossing just over $55 million, which rivals the original, actually. I think it grossed right about the same as the first one, although it has a significantly bigger budget.
I do remember that there was a lot of promotion for that film.
So much.
Yeah.
It was written by Robert Zappia and Matt Greenberg.
Samsonite.
Yeah, for real. It was directed by Friday the 13th's own Steve Miner. It stars Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie Strode / Carrie Tate, Adam Arkin as Will, Michelle Williams as Molly, Adam Hanbird as Charlie, Jodie Lynn O'Keefe as Sarah. Introducing Josh Hartnett as John, Janet Lee as Norma, LL Cool J as Ronnie, Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Jimmy, Brandon Williams as Tony, and a returning Nancy Stevens as Marion, Nurse Marion. All the psycho nods in this one.
Yes.
It was a lot of ode to Hitchcock going on in this film. Which is pretty neat. I mean, just having having Janet Leigh there, and the car. Her car was her car in Psycho.
And explain it for the people who aren't well-versed in movies as we are.
She's the original Hitchcock blonde.
Mm-hmm.
She's the shower scene. Can't escape the shower scene.
All right, bring it in.
I saw an opening, and I had to squeeze the ink in. I'll be good.
She is the... I would say the original Scream Queen, and on top of that, isn't she related to Jamie Lee Curtis?
She's mom.
Mama Lee.
Yeah, she's mom. Tony Curtis is her dad. But, yep, Janet Lee is her mom. And so she played her secretary in this. And so there was a few nods getting Janet Lee to show up. That's not the first time, though, they've riffed on some Hitchcock and like it's, I feel like a lot of these Halloween movies tend to be homages to other horror films. In part six, last week we pulled in, there was a bunch of Shining references, so there was a big Kubrick fan involved in that one, and this one it's Psycho, which I think they've alluded to or they've toyed with before, the Hitchcock idea. Don't ask me which one, I can't remember off the top of my head because allergies. So this will be a fun episode to do.
Oh yeah.
Buckle up, everybody.
You know what, I'm just gonna take a step back and I'm gonna let you take over. Just you take the reins, you take the wheel.
So we're
the struggle.
I know.
Just watching her is just amazing.
Well, Nelly, it's not going to get much better if we wait, so we just need to rip the Band-Aid off and get this episode done. So, H20 is a course correction movie. This is coming after a trio of films that were not great. The original idea behind H20 is to be a direct sequel to Halloween 2 from 1980. Was it 80 or 81 that came out? Whichever, I think it was 80. But this is supposed to be the real Halloween 3, as it was dubbed. We're just going to pretend those other four movies never happened.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. This is the first instance where the Halloween timeline diverted. There are five different timeline deviations for this fucking movie.
Now, as a moviegoer,
yep.
When these films came out, okay, so if you were like really into Halloween and you were going to the drive-ins and hitting up your Blockbusters and everything else, and yeah, it's like if you were like in it to win it and you were just a Halloween fan, mm-hmm. horror movie lover. And it's like, you were so in, and you were aware of the entire storyline going up to this point. And then after watching 4 and 5 and 6, and now getting into this, how do you think people would have really felt by just going in to something brand new, excited that it's been 20 years later, and then all of a sudden it's like everything from 4 to 6 is completely wiped?
I don't know, because I was definitely around. I remember seeing the advertising for H20. I remember seeing the advertising for The Curse of Michael Myers, because I was 10 and 12, respectively, for both of those movies. I don't remember. I was very little. I was 4 when Halloween 5 had come out, so that I don't remember much of. I think there was some honesty in the advertising, though, and I don't think it was a secret that H20 was supposed to retcon parts 4, 5, and 6. I also, maybe I'm just assuming here, but a horror fan's a horror fan. I'm guessing there's a lot of overlap with Texas Chainsaw Massacre fans in that, and that if they're the same in that Venn diagram, they're that overlap, then they're probably just used to it because the Texas Chainsaw Massacre series was a fucking mess.
Well, I mean, like, the way that I went into it, I remember the first time that I did watch this film, I was very confused. Because I know that, like, within the advertisements and things that they're like, oh, it's, you know, 20 years later, Michael's coming. Like, that's all it really was, is they just promoted it was Jamie Lee Curtis. And yeah. Michael.
Lori's back. Boom. Michael's like, back.
Yeah, and so, but they never actually explained the whole thing with her son, or
where
that
Jamie went.
Yeah, or it's like that she went to this, like, protection program and moved clear across the goddamn country, and it's
well,
like...
Well, she didn't go into a protection program.
Well, not, you know...
She faked her death and changed her name.
That's what I'm saying, but it's like...
It was her own version.
But she's got to, you know, actually go through all those hoops to change your name and to do that, all that shit. And so that's why I was like, at the beginning of the movie, we're getting this dream sequence. And it's this whole thing. It's a really actually a cool POV camera that's going through her office, and you don't really understand what's going on. And all of a sudden, we get a picture of Josh Hartnett, and it's like, with that fucking haircut. We'll get into that later. But, like, and then, like, later on, it goes back to a bedroom, and then you see Michael, and then you come back, and then there's a knife in the picture, and it's a lot of, you know, crazy.
Oh, that nightmare she had.
Yeah, yeah. And then she, like, wakes up freaking out.
Yeah.
So it's like.
She had been dealing with PTSD by drinking a lot and keeping a very tight leash on her son, who was 17. So he was the same age as that Lori was when Michael came to town. And she had been worried since the events of Halloween Part 2 that Michael would come back for her at some point, because she didn't believe he was dead. Even though she was watching his body burn, she saw him catch fire and burn. There were no ashes, the body was never found, so she didn't believe he was dead. There was no closure there. Yeah. However, she knew that Michael was her brother, and she was very open about saying that. So she faked her death and changed her name, which is the only bit that they pulled out of that Cult of Thorn trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Because in part 4, we meet Jamie Lloyd, and she's Lori's daughter. But her mom, it said her mom died in a car wreck. And so they pulled that one detail out, scrapped Jamie, but that pulled that car wreck detail out and then extrapolated that out to she faked her death, changed her name, and moved to another state. Because she was worried her brother was going to come get her. However, minor hiccup in that plan. She never knew that Michael was her brother. She didn't know that. We knew, because there was the conversation between Loomis and Marion in the car about why Michael came back to Haddonfield, and it was because Marion had found out that Lori was Michael's sister. But no one bothered to tell Lori that. So are we just to assume that she found that information out at some point in the 20 years? Because for all intents and purposes, the only people who knew that were dead.
Yeah. The one thing, and I could see that being a thing where it was, she's gone 20 years of obsessing
mm-hmm.
over Michael and freaking out and just going into massive panic attacks, and it's like, that is not a way to live. I mean, later on in the movie, she's talking about how, you know, she's done yoga and meditation and group therapy and all this, like, just everything that she could possibly think of to get rid of the thought of Michael, and it's just to have that scar you for that long is actually incredible. Like, it's a very, like, and for you to not be able to get over it in some shape or form, and on top of that, to have your have a husband leave you because you're too fucking crazy, even though he's clear, like,
he's a drug addict.
Yeah, he's a drug addict. A drug addict dropped her because he couldn't handle her. I was like, so that is, like, this on this other level. And then to have her son basically take care of her because she just, for some reason, just can't deal. And then on top of that, her, as you said, short lease, I'm talking, like, she's got it, like, wrapped up around her wrist. Like, he ain't going anywhere.
No.
And it's very, it's not a good life. But on the flip side of that, she puts up a really good show around other people because, you know, she's now the headmistress of a prestigious
boarding school.
They live in this, like, little, like, gated community. Like, so she's like,
no, she lives on the grounds.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, on campus.
Yeah, I know. She's on campus, like, in a gated, like, it's a gated area. Like, so you actually have to go through a security guard to get in. Kids can't get out. All that stuff. I was like, so it's, she's kind of made, she's blocked herself off from everything.
Yeah.
And
yeah, she's made herself a nice little hermit hole.
Yeah, and so it's, for her, when people are, like, talking with her and everything else, like, she's, seems like pretty well adjusted throughout the year, but once
fakes it though.
Yeah, and that is a very hard thing. I mean, I know I've had, you know, my masks I put on, you know, all smiley faces, but it's like to think about the trauma that she went through and to have that going on for 20 years and everything that she's been putting everybody through is really, really tough. And it's a really cool storyline. And it's just one of those things that it's just when you start, poking holes in it because you're like, hey, well, wait, how did this happen? Or, like, when did you find out? Like, even if it's just, like, a little line saying, like, oh, I went to the hospital, like, trying to find out, more information on Michael, and I came across this, and then, cool.
It could have been, you're right. It could have been a throwaway line or just a tiny bit of dialogue to acknowledge how she found out, but...
Take, like, 10 seconds.
You're just supposed to have forgotten that she was never told.
Yeah.
So she was never told about Michael. So she's just assuming he's going to be after her, and I get it. Whether she can acknowledge that he is her brother or not, there was still a buttload of trauma. Her two best friends were slaughtered, and she saw a bunch of dead bodies that night, and she had to do the full final girl circuit, mm-hmm. and even though she never checked for dead, any of those times, she still kind of just assumed he was dead.
And that's, like, one of the reasons why, like, in Rob Zombie's Age 2, I like that the way that she found out, Lori found out, is through Loomis's book.
Yeah.
And I was actually, okay, that's great.
Yeah, I kind of like that, well, I guess however you feel about zombies movies, whatever, that's irrelevant here, but I do like that that was an acknowledged plot hole.
And I think he was doing that because in H1 for Rob Zombie, there was a lot of holes that I saw in John Carpenter's 78 movie that Rob filled in. I was like, okay, that's awesome.
Yeah, he created a few, but he filled in most of the old ones.
Yes.
Which was great. But getting some explanation of how Laurie found out is fantastic. So, bit of an issue there. And then... I don't know where to start with this one. While I do quite enjoy it, and I think that this was, especially towards the end in the third act, they did a pretty fair job of tension building. I think it was a pretty good job doing that. This is post-Scream. This is right after Scream 2. And unfortunately, it felt like a Scream movie, and that's really annoying. This was the time where every horror movie came out was a teen-based horror movie. It was all Scream flavored. It had that Kevin Williamson dialogue. Hell, fucking Michelle Williams was even in this, and Kevin Williamson was the Dawson's Creek writer.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's a Dawson's Creek. It's just like, oh, come on, seriously. It had that Scream feel, and when I was watching it with my boyfriend, we were about 10 minutes into it, and he's like, this feels like a Scream movie. I'm like, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's in that post-Scream era.
And what's awesome is that this movie actually takes place in our universe, where Scream was an actual film. So, because they're...
They were watching Scream 2.
They were watching Scream 2.
Except for the fact of Scream 2 exists, which means Scream 1 exists, which means that whole thing... That means Laurie's entire experience was just a movie. Because there's the whole scene at the end where Jamie Kennedy is on the couch, and he's going, Jamie, turn around. Jamie, don't go. Jamie, no. And it's just... You're just sitting there, and you're like... Wait, is this supposed to be some meta-commentary of silliness? Or was that an accident? Or was it just because Scream 2 had just come out the year before?
Yeah. So, and
it's a mirror, and they're both Miramax properties.
Yeah, so and Miramax is very heavy into that kind of style of movie.
They were. Yeah. I think, I don't think they exist anymore since Weinstein got busted.
Yeah.
But yeah, Miramax Dimension Films was the horror arm of that company. But yeah, I just thought it was a nice little hiccup. I'm like, is that an accident? Or is that supposed to be some weird meta thing that they were trying out? I don't know.
I think that, as we were talking about before, it's like all those movies that came out around this time, around the era of Scream, it's they just kind of just follow that pattern. And when we were talking about it in the last episode, where I'm like, well, what? Like, I mean, it was definitely stamped. This movie is also stamped, but in different ways. They don't really play into any of the weird metal music that when Michael would show up or any of that nonsense. Like, they kind of kept it a little bit more classic. But the styling of the film really just sets it and dates it. Now, I mean, granted, it's like we didn't get the era clothes because all the kids were in prep clothes. They were all in their uniforms.
No, you kind of did. Josh Hartnett dressed like a slob.
Everything
was way oversized on him. It was all too big, and that was the look the dudes were wearing. Everything was kind of baggy and oversized.
I absolutely had flashbacks to my travel hockey days because our travel coach, he had a point where it was, he was seeing all the other teams and all the other kids showing up at these tournaments, and they just looked like
they rolled out of bed.
Yeah, like they were just like, you know, in gym shorts, whatever. So, and he was Russian, and so he was like, you know what? He's like, we are gonna look professional. So he made us dress. And, like, we had to wear, like, dress pants. We had to wear button-up shirts. We had ties with our team logo, like, stitched on them. He's like, everyone's got to look... We got to look professional when we show up to the thing. But there was a few kids on my team that fucking looked like Josh Hartnett. Like, it was...
Oh,
they,
sloppy.
Just the disheveled thing. They pulled their tie down. Like, they just looked... Like, they just went on a drunken bender. Like, it was
like
just...
Like, they just pulled their shirt out of the laundry basket.
Yeah, I'm like, come on, guys. And I'm captain, so I'm actually kind of responsible to a degree for
those morons.
Some of them. And I'm like, Jesus, come on, guys. But it was just funny seeing how a lot of this era of movie was used and how... And I'm trying to think back, like, or to... Now, like how movies are made now, and like what are some of those staples that have stamped this era's horror movies? And it's
usually it's some sort of lighting. Usually it's some sort of usually some sort of lighting. There's usually something. There's a sound design thing or. The jump scares, like, there's usually something kind of sort of trendy going on there. Like, it was the torture porn thing for a while, where everything had to be bloody to, like, the nth degree. And then when that went out of style, it was the James Wan style with, like, The Conjuring and Insidious, where it was a lot of tension building and jump scares. And we're coming out of that now, and it's a lot more of the, like, highbrow horror with a message. So you can usually stamp an era, and it doesn't always have to be with the way that the people look. There's usually a vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, if you didn't know, cause again, with the prep, they were in prep uniforms for most of the movie. But there were definitely when they changed and they were no longer in that, it was very clearly,
I forgot about that. Yeah.
They weren't like Josh Hartnett was wearing the striped Tommy Hilfiger sweater and the khakis. And Sarah was wearing the Asian-inspired thing, that look that was big at that point in time.
I forgot about that,
the red silk jacket and the floral tank top. And so there was a lot of things that definitely made this look like a very 90s kind of thing. LL Cool J was in the movie.
Well, that'll just stamp it for sure. But no, and the girls even had like that... hairstyle and look, like in the makeup and stuff like that.
Michelle Williams had some lip liner.
Yeah, it was pretty heavy on that end. I mean, that was something I kind of wanted to talk about LL Cool J.
Okay.
So, one thing that I do love in horror movies is when they bring in some type of celebrity that I am a fan of. I love LL Cool J. Like, I am a 90s hip-hop kid. Like, I am a hip-hop head for sure. It's like, seeing him in the film was really good. And what was funny was that I actually saw Deep Blue Sea before I saw this film.
Of course you did.
Because sharks and whatnot.
Yeah.
And so, like, I actually liked him a lot in Deep Blue Sea, and the fact that he survived at the end with the goddamn parrot was awesome. And it's just a fun movie for me. But then going back into seeing this, I was a little confused because I didn't know if they were, if there was an actual reason to use him. Because most of the time when you bring in, I mean, at this point, he's a pretty big name. I mean, he's on the goddamn poster for,
yeah,
you know, for crying out loud. But it's like, do you, I mean, I almost feel like maybe he could have gotten into like a fight with Michael or something. But it's like, he was just kind of just there and it was a little weird.
Hold on. I'm wondering if it wasn't the same production company. If Miramax wasn't doing Deep Blue Sea and H20. I'm trying to look it up now. No, it was Warner Brothers. So, no, not. I don't know. I mean, this was him. It's a lower budget, I guess, lower budget horror movie. This was LL Cool J trying to transition into being a movie star instead of just a rapper. There's a lot of that going on, and it was probably a cheap and easy cast to get with him. It suited him fine because he was the struggling romance smut writer.
Yeah, that was another thing. I was like, I like that little touch of it, but
it was a nice little character touch for sure.
But when he's taught, like, writing a story and he's talking to his girlfriend on the phone. And he's trying to, I don't know if he's just like, I want your feedback on it, but I'm like trying to like turn you on because I can't be around you. And I mean, that's interesting. Well, like,
I think he was getting feedback. It's like, hey baby, hear what I wrote. And
but it just came off as so awkward.
Yeah, and he's trying to be like sensual when he's reading it. It's like, dude, no, stop it.
He's like, it's like he worked his way up her long, slender ankles up into those gobbledygook gams and then moved on all up and just went right for her smooth melons. And I'm like, are you 12?
Like, no, he said tumultuous melon breasts.
Oh, the melon breasts. I was like, it's, and like the way his delivery was like, it's up in her melon breast. It's like,
are you trying to be sexy about it?
Yeah, it's like,
ah. It was pretty rough.
Take two.
And he was also really bad at his job.
Very bad
at
his job.
He was a terrible security guard. Like, from beginning to end, somehow he managed to let John and his friend out during lunch. And he knew that they weren't supposed to go out, but he let them go. He let them talk him into letting them out. Even though he knew Carrie was going to hang him if she found out that he was the one who let them go. And then when Michael had pulled up in that old jalopy and, got out of the car and disappeared into the woods for a minute, Ronnie, instead of calling out and waiting for a response, he opens the gate and goes to check things out, allowing Michael to like sneak in behind him, which apparently Michael Myers is weightless and makes no noise when he walks. Leaves don't crunch, gravel doesn't scrape, nothing.
Nope.
Okie dokie.
He likes to creep. And the one thing that I found was really funny.
And the other thing he was bad at was towards getting into the end of the movie when somebody was coming up the stairs and Will and Carrie were in the hallway. Carrie had her gun. Will takes the gun and he starts shooting. Emptying out the revolver, by the way. There were no bullets left. Grazes Ronnie's head, apparently. But, like, Ronnie didn't call out when he got to the top of the stairs. Saying, hey. You know, nothing. No noise, nothing. And he gets shot for his trouble. I'm like, that's really fucking stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's a killer on the loose, you kind of want to make yourself known so you aren't mistaken for the aforementioned killer. But, okie dokes.
Yeah, that scene was a little funky because they had the silhouette of Michael literally walking into shot, and then he starts popping off.
Ronnie.
Yeah, he starts popping off stuff. And I mean, again, it's a cool little, like, you know, switch up. But then, like, literally, like, as they're, like, trying to take care of Ronnie, Michael, he's like, hey, what are you guys doing? I'm just going to stab you now. And
so, like, yeah, Ronnie
lifts him up, and I was like,
and
okay.
Then Ronnie tries to come to save the day at the end when Carrie's about to put the death blow onto Michael, and he goes, stop, he's dead, and she's like, no, he fucking's not. Like, she knows what's up.
She's about as dead as you are. But
yeah, he sucks at his job.
Those shots, too, that he cracked off when he took the gun from Carrie, and he starts firing off, and, like, if you freeze frame, like, where the bullets were blowing up, nowhere near Ronnie.
Oh, very nice.
Like, it's just, like, the way that things were blowing up, it's just, it never even hit him. Like, it was just, like, because you could see everything, like, blowing up around, like, on the wall behind him. Like, he hit him, like, there's, like, this lamp above, like, high above his head. And fucking, he, like, creams the shit out of that. It's
yeah,
just,
Will
like,
was not a yeah. good shot. And then he laid out all the bullets. They were completely disarmed at that point. So guess it wasn't bad that he died. So yeah, Ronnie was bad at his job. Will was a bad shot. He had the aim of a stormtrooper.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's great.
But, like, so with LL Cool J, I like that they did add him in there because it gave, like, a good fresh face because...
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, and like I said, I like when they do put those... You know, just other celebrities into those movies that typically maybe, you know, not normally there. And going back to, like, Deep Blue Sea, I mean, when you have, there's a comedian, he was in, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but it's like, I remember seeing him, and he was a delivery guy in, Friday After Next, and, super funny dude, and I hate that, I and blanking on his name, but it's like when I saw him, I was like, oh shit, like, he's fucking in there. Or it's like when you see, like, people like Bill Burr in, like,
yeah.
Star Wars, it's just like, oh, like, that's really cool. Might take you out of the movie for a little bit, but if they're doing their job right, they just put you right back into it. And I think that LL Cool J did that with Ronnie. It's like, I didn't really see LL, I saw Ronnie. Like,
yeah,
that was cool.
Manage to kind of, fade into the role, which is fine.
Yeah.
So yeah, it wasn't necessarily as jarring as it could have been. Not nearly as jarring as Busta Rhymes' role is going to be next
week. You cool it. We're gonna get into that later. We're into this movie now.
Just saying.
Get into it.
Just saying.
We got a lot to talk about, and I need you and your sick ass to get in it.
I'm doing what I can. So let's talk about Michael. For a little bit. Michael?
Just a little? Okay.
A little bit, a lot of it.
The no burn Michael? Sure.
He has both of his eyes and nary a burn to be seen.
And you can see him clear as day. I'm not going to get into it. I've already chirped on it. We already know.
We know. It's bad.
Yep.
Bad continuity. Bad.
Yep.
It's still really funny. Go back and listen to the last three episodes.
Jesus.
There's so much ranting.
Age Christ.
Especially the fourth one. So much ranting. He apparently can teleport and is a champion at holds. I have to admit, the scene where he's dropping down from the ceiling in the hallway is a really cool visual, but he had been suspended hanging from that pipe for I don't even know how long, and I'm not terribly strong in the upper body department, so I can't even do a single chin-up, but I can't imagine somehow dead-bugging myself and holding on to this pipe from the ceiling, just dangling there waiting for Lori to maybe come back, even after he watched her drive away.
And not only that motherfucker's... came down like a goddamn orangutan.
One-armed,
just whoop, and then whoop, and then boom. Right there, right in the perfect moment for Carrie. And it was just like, it's...
Yeah, but that's the killer part of that whole thing is
so dumb.
He watched her drive away with the kids. So he set himself up there in the hopes that maybe there was a small, teeny-weeny, itsy-bitsy chance that she might turn around and come back. She, for all he knew, she fucked off with the kids.
Yeah.
And was not planning on coming back.
Yeah. And that was the thing, was like, it falls back into that same premise that the 78 film had when he's just in the fucking, in the back of the car, and he's just sitting there waiting in hopes that there's going to be a kid
that's
going
to show up. Yeah, Annie was coming out. Which, yay. He also has teleportation powers.
Yeah, we've already said that.
Again. So it was really... The funniest part that I dealt with was the scene where Josh Hartnett and Michelle Williams were running out of the school. This was after Josh Hartnett's character got stabbed in the leg. And they were trying to sprint down the driveway. And Michael was behind them, but like with a fairly significant distance behind them. But you could see he was following at a brisk walk while they were trying to run. And he... Boy, does he catch up fast, because suddenly he appears in front of them. And I'm watching this with my boyfriend, and he's just sitting there swearing his head off at that point. Because he's like, what the fuck? Why is this a thing? And he just, yep, he just teleported around, and we got a layout of the school. And when the scene where Carrie, Will, John, and Molly were running back into the school, locking Michael out of the front door, somehow he manages to get all the way around the other side of the building, scales up to the second story, and just happens to find a window that's unlocked and climbs in. In the minute and a half somehow it takes for all these other characters to sprint across the house.
Like, parkour, parkour.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, he's quick.
Now, I had the same thought, and I had to, like, think back to Behind the Mask of Leslie Vernon. And in his explanation, it was like, oh, like, you know, these kids are really fast. You know, you gotta make them think that you're just walking. And he's like, but you just gotta, like, you have to, like, walk, walk, walk. When they turn around, you just start sprinting as fast as you can. And then when they turn around again, you have to, like, stop and make it look like you're walking again. And I was like, okay, that kind of seemed like what Michael was doing. And all of a sudden, it was just boom. Then when he was in front of them, I'm like, all right, that's a little much there, bud. Right. And then there was a lot of scenes where he would, as you said, he's very nimble on his feet and super quiet, because there was the one scene where Carrie is, and it still bugs me to not say Lori, but when she is trying to take on her brother, and she's going underneath these tables trying to get away from him. At first, you see his feet, and she's got a good eye on him. And then out of nowhere, she, like, tries to move to another table, looks over, and he's gone.
Yeah.
Well, he decided that he's just going to jump his happy ass on top of these metal tables.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, I, as a wee lunchbox, have walked on those type of tables before, and I got my ass chewed out for my troubles. But that was the thing, is like, every time, like, when you step on them, there's creaking. Those things do not hold a whole lot. So, I mean, it's like, you hit, like, or you step on it, and I mean, and he's literally walking across them and not making a goddamn sound.
Yeah, he has mosquito feet, apparently. Nobody can hear him, which is crazy. I get that he's supposed to be, like, the killer, like, the top killer. But eventually, Superman gets boring. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a similar issue that Superman has. Eventually, because he's immune to everything and he can do everything, at some point, you're like, there's no stakes.
That's the thing, is that with, like, when it comes to Superman, there are limitations that he does have. But with Michael, what it seems is that, yes, he is an apex predator, and he just won't be stopped, and for fucking reasons we... And that's the thing, is, like, because there's so many holes or there's so much going on with why he's doing the things that he's doing or how he's doing the things he's doing, it's right. just... Like, I know that he's supposed to be super strong, but the way that he could stab a person and lift them clear off the ground and hold them there by just the blade of a knife... is
oh it's crazy
it's kind of impressive and like in H2 when he lifts up the nurse with a scalpel he lifts a human body with a scalpel, and I mean, granted, like, she was a lot smaller than he was, so I could get the whole, like, being, you know, a little bit stronger,
Will
or whatever.
Was the same size as him,
yeah, and that thing is, Will was a big dude, he all he had was a knife, and he just picks his ass up and just holds him there.
Also, apparently it was an electric knife because Will was like...
Shaking. Well, I think it was just the shock of being stabbed, but he was just trying to act and
you could
whatnot,
say that, but it's still kind of funny.
Yeah, because, I mean, the girl in H2 did the same thing when she got stabbed. She's like, like, you know, flailing like a fish kind of thing. But, like, that was the thing was Michael has always had those supernatural abilities... That's never explained as to, one, is that something that is a part of his lore, which would make a lot of stuff a little bit more known. The fact that we know that Superman has laser eyes and, you know,
the point I'm trying to make is just that eventually, if you have all the offense and no weaknesses, you're fucking boring.
Yeah.
And this is the part where, well, yes, I do enjoy the movie. The character starts to become kind of boring because it's, okay, well, bullets can't stop him, fire can't stop him, he's been stabbed, he's been...
Electrocuted.
Like, there's so many things that have happened to him that... And he just, nothing phases him. He might go down for a second, but then...
He's back up.
He's back up very quickly.
With a no-cell.
100% no-cell. Like, Undertaker-style no-cell. And he does the sit up too. The same thing.
And that was something that Undertaker actually, when they were building the character on, and he would do the rise.
Yeah, he took that from Michael
He got
Myers.
That from Michael. I was like, oh, okay, that's actually kind of cool. Like,
which, okay, great. It's just after a while, it's like there are no stakes, and it's just okay. He's a machine. He's just going to keep coming and coming and coming and coming. And it's like, well, that's kind of dumb. I guess I don't know. And it literally took him getting his head cut off to stop him. But what's the worst about that is Lori finally gets her, Lori finally gets her satisfaction and her closure. And the studio does not want to stick the landing. The way H2O ended, it was ambiguous. It's like, okay. We're going to cut his head off. And if this movie bombs, Michael's dead and we don't have to go back to it. But they have Deus Ex Machina in their back pocket because if the movie does do well and they want to do a sequel, they have a way to fudge it. And I'm just like, God damn it.
And that's where I feel like my question from before, where going into this film... If you have been aware and you're well versed in the Halloween movies, going into it where you're like, oh, I don't, like, who the hell is this kid? And it's like you have to deal with the whole storyline with the son, and you have to try and, as a moviegoer, try and get caught up. And then in the next film, when we come to find out, you know, that it was a kind of a bait and switch, and you're like, well, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. And it's like.
I mean, that's part of the reason why Resurrection did so poorly.
Yeah, but that's where it's like, as. I don't feel like during this era that a lot of the like movie production and the producers, they really gave credit to the fans. They just kind of just did whatever they wanted to do, and it for me it hurt because it's like I don't want a movie like that where I want to have some consistency, and it's like I understand that it's like okay, yeah, we're gonna get like the bait and switch or. Like when that stuff happens, it's I understand why, because money, but it's just one of those things where when you have a franchise like this that is retconned to shit, where it's like every single fucking turn they change something, and it, you, like, as a fan, you're like, oh fuck, now I gotta get caught back up, and it's like you can't get your story straight. And I remember talking with a bunch of my friends back in you know, when I was playing hockey and stuff like that, we were talking about, you know, Jason and Freddie and Michael, and one of the guys kept getting the entire story completely ass backwards. Like, he couldn't keep it, he couldn't keep the story of Michael straight. He got the whole point of, like, oh, he's, you know, babysitter killer. But then, like, he was like, oh, yeah, like, she had a daughter and a son, and I was just like, well, like...
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah, kind of. He's like, no, no, he did, and both, like, it was just so, like, funky. And it was just a whole conversation of that. Whereas, like, with Freddie, it was like, we kind of got the whole, you know, timeline just straight through. And then same thing with Jason. It was like, okay, timeline straight through. Even though, like, yeah, movies are maybe a little funky, but it's just like, to have to go through this... you know, this weird funky tree and follow this timeline, it's just it kind of hurts as a fan, because it makes me feel like the you know, producers and stuff like that don't really care about that story.
They didn't It was all a cash grab.
Yeah.
And that's the part that I would love to remind everybody, is that most of these movies beyond the first one or two are all fucking cash grabs. That's all that they were. A studio saw dollar signs because something did really well, and then that was it. It was game over for everybody. It's just, we're going to make these until, we're going to milk that cow until the cow keels over dead. And that's what was happening here. And you can't, at this point, you can't say it's franchise fatigue, because there was breaks. There was 3 years between part 6 and part 7. Fine. But this was, I think, because of the constant changes in quality of those 3 middle movies, 4, 5, and 6, and just especially with the 6th one being such a clusterfuck of studio involvement and production snafus and script issues, and anything that could go wrong did go wrong. They just kind of threw their hands up and said, you know what, erase it. And whomever pitched the idea came along and said, hey, we can get Jamie Lee Curtis back. Let's write something and just pretend those last 3 movies never happened. So the studio went, okay, because the law of diminishing returns had kicked in on those. And it was because they got Jamie Lee back as Laurie, is, I think, one of the biggest reasons why H2O did as well as it did.
And that was something where, kind of looking back at, like some of those other franchises, like, for instance, the latest Texas Chainsaw Massacre I've mentioned before, where it wasn't that they kind of did, like, their own little story and this whole thing of these, you know, bunch of new age type people, like high-tech Silicon Valley type.
Oh, yeah.
Wanting to buy the ghost town to make a new area that's comfortable for them. But then they kind of bring in the whole stuff with Sally and this old, like, the first movie lore and everything else. So it's like they tried. And they tried to do something new, and they tried to bring it in. Was it great? Swing and a miss a little bit.
Little.
But now, like, once for Halloween, I remember when Halloween 2018 was coming out, I had this, like, back and forth with the timeline, and I remember sitting down, I actually sat down to write this out, because I was so confused as to that this weird timeline that Halloween has. And then I was like, okay, so if they're retconning everything in the middle, and now it's just going to go from H1 to now.
Yeah.
That's what, 40 years?
40 years. Yeah,
40 years. 40. So with this movie, with H20, it was 20 years between the two.
Yes.
Which, I don't know if it's worse or not, having Laurie being that batshit crazy for 40 years and dealing with all that compared to a 20-year span.
I don't... when we get to 2018, yeah. I think we'll talk about that more. I feel like either way you were dealing with the PTSD thing, the difference is that I like the 2018 Lori a little bit more because she was very proactive.
Very much so.
This was... At age 20, the Lori we got was scared. She literally went into hiding. And it wasn't to prepare for anything. It was literally to run and hide. And hopefully I die before he finds me. Change completely with a name change. And the way she behaved, she was... You saw in that opening scene when John opens up her medicine cabinet, you saw the pill bottles in there. And she's on a whole bunch of benzos and everything else to try to deal with the anxiety and all of the post-traumatic stress issues that came along with it. And she drank a lot, too. She was a fucking alcoholic. So, like...
And I wonder, and I wonder if she acted like this throughout the year or if it was just around Halloween.
I think she did it. I think that was her. I just think it ratcheted up at Halloween. Because the way John acted and the way he had that conversation with her in the kitchen at the beginning where he said, "Mom, you gotta start loosening the reins," because he was a senior in high school and he wanted to go on that class trip to Yosemite. She said no. She didn't want to, even though she did eventually fill out the permission slip, in an ironic twist, it was probably the safest place for him to be, is the one place she thought he shouldn't go.
Yeah.
So he was at the school the whole time with a killer on the loose. Oopsie, Mom. Bad mom move.
And the funny thing was, like, how funny would it be? It's like, okay, Jason takes Manhattan or Canada, and then on top of that, it's like Michael takes on Yosemite. It's like,
yeah.
What was the, like, do you really think that, like, he was just going to show up at Yosemite and take out her son? It was just the thought
process. I don't know what the thought process was, it's just,
and that's where it's like, I get the whole thing of, oh, no, I need to keep you protected. I was like, first off, you know, a kid that size, I mean, I think he should be able to take care of himself. Out in the real world, minus a serial killer slasher after him.
Right.
And that's where it's like, I wonder, and he seemed like he was a pretty well-rounded kid. I mean, he was very fairly popular, and he was...
Yeah, he seemed fairly well adjusted, considering his mom has had a stranglehold on him his entire life.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of, like, again, back to my hockey days, I watch a lot of those, the homeschooled figure skater kids, and I could just see how their moms were just big helicopter parent. And, yeah. I mean, it was bad. I mean, every little thing that they would do, I mean, they couldn't eat without, you know, them knowing, because they had to be on, like, a strict regiment. They had to work out. They had to do all this
training. Figure skating moms are scary.
It was, like, there was a couple that were pretty nice, but there was some that were just, I kind of felt bad for the kids because they just couldn't do the stuff that they wanted to do.
Right.
Like, one of the kids actually wanted to play hockey with all the other boys, and the mom was like, "Nope, you're good at this. You're doing this."
Okay, Mom.
Yeah, it's like, he couldn't break away, so it was just... It was pretty rough, but like with John, it was just like he seemed like he could handle his mom, and he was dealing it. But it was like a weird role reversal where at some points he kind of seemed like the parent, and she was the panicky teenager or whatever. Yep. It was just like it was a lot of back and forth like that.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Because when she was screaming her head off and from that nightmare, he was the one, he ran in, he calmed her down, he got her medicine, like, he did what he was supposed to do, and he definitely stepped up into more of an adult role than he had any right to be in. And he even commented on that, I think it was when they were on the street and she busted him for skipping school. He had mentioned that, like, I've spent my entire life taking care of you. that's not right. I want a life of my own. He had mentioned, those obviously weren't his exact words. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
But that's the gist of what he was telling her, is I want to go do my own thing. Like, can you please take the boot off? I want to go. And she just, I don't know. She just, eventually she got there, but I don't, that only came at the point where she was teaching her English class and they were recovering Frankenstein, and Molly basically gave a whole thing on, letting go, and one of the themes in Frankenstein with Victor and the monster.
Well, it was, the fact that Victor would need to, confront the monster that he made or that's in his life in order to,
right.
You know, let go. And so it's like, yeah, I like that they did do that connection. And on top of that, you know, I do love the Frankenstein story a lot. So I was like, okay, that's actually a really good, you know, little nod to a classic horror with a, you know, with a new horror. It's like, so, and on top of, like, all the psycho references and whatnot, so I was like, okay, like, I'm with that. Like, I could deal with that. There was one moment, too, where it was right after English class, and Carrie was, you know, gonna give John the permission slip, so she was like, she called John back in, and for a moment, John had this, like, feeling of, or you could see, like, it was an expression of, like, yeah, Mom, like, what do you need? And then it just kind of went into this, like, yeah, what do you want? Like, he wasn't putting up with her shit. Like, this is right after their big argument on the street after, you know, he didn't skip class.
Yeah, he was kind of over it.
Yeah, he was just like, I don't, like, whatever the fuck you got to say. Like, and it was almost like a weird breakup moment.
Like, a little bit, but that was when she gave him the permission slip.
Yeah, and he was like, all right, well, thanks, Mom. And it was like, he had, I don't know if it was just because there could have been other people watching, and he didn't say, like, thank, he just, I mean, he said thank you, but it was just it was just like, all right, thanks, I got what I wanted, and then just, and he walked away.
Right, even though, like, at that point he had already decided, I'm not going. Like, he was fine with staying behind, because then he and his girlfriend could do whatever they wanted unsupervised.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Which is, what a bizarre plot, like, it's like, okay, first off, when you sign a permission slip, right, your name gets put on a list for field trips and what have you.
Sure.
So, when every field trip I've ever been on, I don't know if it's just my school being very efficient or what have you, but when you get on the bus, they call roll, and if you don't say here, they go, okay, we'll wait. And we'll go find that fucker, because it's like, he's supposed to be on the bus.
Right. However, his mom was the headmistress, so fuck y'all. It's kind
of... Yeah, but it was like, no one said anything. Not one person said, oh, you know, like, how do they know that you're supposed to go on this trip for Yosemite?
Well, he never turned in the permission slip. She'd only gotten so far as to sign it and give it to him. It never made it into the right hands.
Okay.
Because he took it and he threw it away.
Yeah.
So it didn't go anywhere.
That does make sense. Okay, I could see that. But it was just still, like, really funny that I was like, as I'm watching it, I'm like, was there no, like, there's no organization there? Like, it's just, right. Get on the fucking bus and let's go? It's like, and on top of that, it's like, when you come back from, or on your trip back to from Yosemite, it's like, wouldn't you want to have a roll call to make sure everyone's on the fucking bus before you come back home?
Yeah, I think they ended up doing that. It's just, he never turned in the permission slip. So that's the end of that conversation.
Oh my God, it just hit me too. When all those kids came back, it's like, all the news and bodies, all the parents. And all, yeah. I mean, they're not going to see all that stuff, but it's just the whole thing of like, oh my God, what happened? And it was just the, like, all the news about Carrie being Lori and, like, Michael Myers and all this other, right, like, stuff, and her stealing the fucking van. It's like, all that news is going to come out.
Oh, for sure.
And I mean, it's like, because of the way they left it, it was just very open as to have, like, and I always love thinking about storylines like that, where it's like, what happened after all this stuff, where it's like,
We never get the aftermath stories.
No, you never get that where it's just like, oh my God. Or like all the stuff with like Scream, where it's like, yeah, we know what happens that, you know, with the two boys that went on a murdering spree. And then it's like later on, but it's like, what happened to shit at school? It's like, does people fucking know? Or it's like,
right, all that stuff. That's actually a good question.
I always like that stuff.
Yeah.
But there was the one thing that I was not happy about was the fact that I did not give a shit about the kids in John's group.
Nope. Not even a little.
I do not know their names. I know you said them. I do not know their names.
It's Molly, Sarah, and I'm blanking.
Yeah.
If you give me a sec, I can look it up, but yeah, I don't remember.
The only reason that I knew the boy, the weird horn dog kid that was dating the
Charlie.
Charlie. Okay, Charlie, who was dating the brunette, I believe is Molly, right?
No, he was Sarah.
Sarah. Jesus.
Molly, yeah. Molly was John's the blonde girlfriend.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Charlie and Sarah, the reason that I recognized Charlie was because wasn't he in the boy in Jumanji?
Yeah, he was Little Alan.
So I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. But it's just weird seeing like Little Alan and then him being like this horn dog character.
Yeah, it's talking about roaming orgies and shit. It's like, calm down.
Yeah, it's like, all right. And like, wasn't there a thing when they were doing the weird seminar thing for Yosemite, and Carrie was giving him the kind of rundown, like,
yeah,
no drugs, no drinking.
Yeah.
Didn't he like come in and gave like some type of line, like that was a little horn dogish?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, he had so many of those, I honestly can't remember them all.
No, but it was just weird how it's like I didn't care at all about those characters, and that is a problem for me because it's like it's you literally just look at them, you're like, you're just coffin fodder. Like, it's just not...
Yeah.
Like, I was like, you're dead. Like, I already know you're dead. And then, like, when you have a character like Ronnie with, you know, LL Cool J, it's just like, okay, something's gonna happen to you. You could die. You could not die. Like there's potential for you to
live. You might die. You might not die.
So, I mean, but it's just one of those, like, you lock on to him, and I think it's because it's LL. And then you have Will, where it's like, I was actually more surprised that he did die. Like, I thought maybe he would have actually survived a little bit longer, but it was one part of the story where I was just like, oh shit, that really sucks for Carrie, because it's like, you know, that was something that, like, she was trying to restart her life with, and she really connected. I was like, and he just kind of just got, you know, the bad end of the blade on that one. So
he got the pointy end.
Yeah. But that was something where it bugs me in horror movies when you literally just do not care, and it almost doesn't even matter.
Nope.
What the characters are. It's just brunette one, blonde one, horny dude two. Like, it's just,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I wish they were more than, I wouldn't say, they were pretty one-dimensional. Like, John was fine, and Molly was okay. But the two friends were pretty unnecessary, and, like, you're right. There was really nothing to latch onto there. They're barely one-dimensional.
And the thing is like, with Josh, as playing as John, like, he was fantastic. Like, I loved, like, I actually loved watching him act with Carrie. Like, it was just like they had a really good connection, and there was intensity. It was a really, really good acting experience.
Yeah.
And it was very believable and a lot of energy, so I was with it for sure. And again, Jamie Lee Curtis, like, she fucking acted her ass off when it came to those serious moments. Like, when Michael shows up and she goes and grabs the gun,
God! After that whole scene where she's straddling Will, they're making out, and that's when she decides to fess up who she really is. And when she realizes, I don't know why this connection makes a difference. Whether that when Will asks Carrie how old she was when Michael attacked her, she said 17, and then she looked up at And that was when her sister was killed. Judith was killed. She was 17. And she looked up at the mantle and saw her son's birthday card. Happy 17th birthday. And so somehow she's like... So somehow the leap happened where not only is he attacking on Halloween, but it's something about the being age 17 made a difference. Like, he was specifically going to come after John because he was 17 years old. Is what's implied there. And then she goes... jumps off of Will's lap and she goes, oh my god, and she pulls the revolver from under her pillow.
Well, no, she tries to, like, she freaks out and then she tries to make the phone call and then realize that the phone lines are out and then she's like, oh, everything's happening, like, it's all happening. And there is absolutely nothing worse than dealing with a crazy person.
Nope.
And then them be right.
Right? Like, fuck.
You know that... Do you remember that scene in Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs where there's the two, like, crazy homeless guys and they got the sign. It's like, what is, like, the end is near or the end is today or something. And the other guy's like... it's like...
And they're all high-fiving because No.
The meatball, like, the food storm starts coming down, starts destroying everything, and it says, like, the end is now. And the guy that has that sign, he's, like, rubbing it in the other guy's face. He's like, I told you! He's just, like, slapping him. That whole thing, it's like, that's the scene that I kind of... That just reminded me of all of this because it's like... For 20 years, she knew that, oh, he's going to show back up, and then all of a sudden, boom, that fucking weird mask is now sitting right in her face, and everything is all true. Everything that she's been feeling for 20 years is now, to this point, exactly true. And even, like, John, when after he gets stabbed in the leg and they put him in the car, he's freaking out because he's just like, holy shit, she was actually right.
Yeah, and this whole time, he was like, whatever, Mom.
Yeah, and it's funny, just the I fucking told you so. No one fucking believes me. Everyone called me crazy. And now, right?
Mom was right. Yeah. Oh, my God.
it's that kind of premise that it drives me nuts with crazy people.
Yeah.
Because you just have to eat crow and just like, all right, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but, like, did you see how right I actually was?
Yeah,
was
and then they so just keep right. going.
So right.
The knife goes deeper.
Oh, God. Yep. That's, trying to think of anything else. I'm sorry, I've got brain fog.
Oh, yeah, no. All right, here, I'll keep it going here. So,
thank you.
One thing that I wanted to touch on was the beginning of the movie. So, the nurse from Loomis's day. Was it Miriam?
Marion.
It was nice actually getting that kind of tie-in to everything. It was that scene for me, I actually had high hopes for. Because I was like, this is awesome. Because, one, we get a very young Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah.
It's fantastic seeing him.
This is him at his peak Third Rock powers.
Third Rock, yeah. And so that whole scene was really cool because she comes home. It's in another part of Illinois.
And yeah, that's weird considering most of the movie takes place in California. Yeah. The least they could have done was start it in Haddonfield. They were in Langdon?
Yeah, it was another part of Illinois. And so when she comes home, she notices that the door was open and, like, it was, you know, clearly broken. Like, someone broke in.
Right.
So, the one time...
Wait. She didn't have to unlock the door?
She didn't unlock... Like, she didn't go. Like, she saw that the light was busted.
Yeah, but and she, like, opened her door. Was it unlocked?
I don't remember if she... I don't know if she tried to unlock it or if she just opened it.
Okay.
But I remember when she walked in, she just looked down the dark hallway, and she just had this feeling that something was wrong.
Sure.
So, my thing that I absolutely praised and loved for was the fact that she was like, I don't feel comfortable, and she ran
to the neighbor's house. Smart person.
She did not do that stupid white person trope where she walks through and, hey, is anybody here? I guess I'll take a shower now. And then, like, you know, like, then the killer comes out and does the same.
Right, right, right. Yeah, we were always taught that if it looked like your house has been broken into, don't go in.
Yeah,
go to the neighbor's
she
house.
She did everything that I felt like she was supposed to. Even by the, like, hanging out with a fucking kid. in the next house until things, like, you know, the other one that, like, well, she kind of sent in to make sure it was okay.
Jimmy.
Yeah, like, so after all of that, and they kind of got the okay, that's when she went back into her house and scoped the place out and then knew that something was wrong. And then she went back over to the other kid's house and saw the fucking carnage and death with an awesome fucking hockey skate kill.
That was pretty cool. Yep.
So when I saw all this at the beginning, I was like, this is great.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm going to go with it. It's fine. But then when it came down to the point of she was also as batshit crazy as Loomis was. Oh, and also there was a picture of Loomis that they featured in the inner office. So I was like, okay,
It looked like a promo photo from the first movie.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, nice nod. But then when you see the wall, and this is all before the fucking opening credit.
Yeah.
So this is, like, this is a big lead up. And like, I don't know if I like movies when they don't just jump into the credit scene where it's like, you just go in like 5-6 minutes and you're like, oh, this is the beginning of the movie? Like,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
But
it's like, hang on a second.
But then you see her wall of Michael Myers memorabilia. And it's just like,
I think part of that was actually because Loomis had lived with her during his final years. It was how that story went. Was she took care of Loomis his last few years before he died. I think that was her office, but prior to that, it was Loomis's bedroom.
Oh.
That's my thought process on it. I don't know 100% if that's sure. For sure, but that's what I gathered from it, because a lot of that seemed like Loomis stuff.
But again, it's one of those, we don't get any exposition on that.
Yeah. So you're putting it to guess.
And I'm still going based off of 6, where he ends up, I guess, dying in the asylum or whatever. And
I mean, either way, he's dead. it doesn't matter. But there was that. And but why? Here's the part that I don't understand. A, why does she have Laurie Strode's file? She was never a patient of Loomis, nor was she a patient of Marion's. Like, Marion never really met her.
Ever.
So for some reason she has this file on a person she's never met, on a person that Loomis has never treated. So is it just Loomis's information gathering when he was trying to find her? Or did he know where he was? Because Michael broke in. Somehow Michael had been hiding out for 20 years in the Haddonfield area, discovered that Marion Chambers had moved to Langdon, found her house, broke in specifically to find a folder that no one could have possibly known she had, because it wouldn't make sense for her to have it. It wouldn't even make sense for Loomis to have it. Again, not his patient. With all of this information on Lori's past, her faking her death, her new address, her change of name, why would, if she faked her death, changed her name, and left the state, why would anybody have that information?
And that was the one thing where I was just like, okay, you fucking ruined a good thing.
You did.
Because I was like, oh, that opening scene was fucking boss. I was in. And then when you finally realize exactly what was happening.
Can you think about it for a second?
So, yeah. And then on top of that, so the police show up to Marion's house and they're knocking on the door. And then, like, because it was the B&E. And then they look over and they're like, oh, the neighbor's house. Oh, there's somebody else broke in. Like, it must have, you know, a 2-for-1. And then all of a sudden you see Michael driving away in a very cool classic car.
He stole Marion's car again.
Yeah, stole her car again, and then he's driving away with the lights off. Well, then it comes out to where it was on the outskirts of California. There's this weird little, like,
rest stop.
Just a rest stop bathroom that's kind of like off the beaten path, and this lady and her child, the kid is so super fucking cute. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it was the cutest goddamn kid.
She had to be 5 years old.
Yeah. And so she's like, I have to go to the bathroom. She was supposed to go to the women's bathroom, but it was locked. And so I'm like, all right, well, let's just go to the men's bathroom. It's, you know, they're going to, and like, the, it was really cute with the little girl. She's like, yeah, but that's the men's. And she's like, well, they're going to have to deal with it because, like, I was like, what fucking men?
Yeah.
Like, that would have been my reaction. I was like, also, there's nobody here.
Baby girl was doing a pee-pee dance and needed to go bad.
I was like, I'm pretty sure if there was a man there, he probably would have, you know, given you a pass. But it was just like, there's no one here.
Logic, child logic. I know. That's all.
But, like, so they go in and, like, she's, you know, singing her song in, her, in the bathroom.
She
and
was
the,
very
you know,
cute, yeah.
Mom was doing, like, you know, she's doing her thing. But then all of a sudden, like, Michael sees her bag and, like, steals it, right?
Well, the fact that Michael, he shredded a tire on the outskirts of town because you saw that he had broke down somehow. Okay, so we did the math on this. go ahead and finish the story on the little girl, and I'll get
so,
to this in a second.
Okay, so Michael, like, so that was the thing is after the car pulls up, you see that Michael's car has been broken down. At first, I thought like maybe he just ran out of gas. But yeah, then like as the camera turned around, he had a shredded tire. And then a little part of me was like, you know what? I'm pretty sure that Michael would probably been able to figure out how to change a tire. And it's like, and the fact that an old car like that does not have a spare is
cars don't.
No, but I'm just saying it's like, or it's like he couldn't like do his shape thing and go steal a tire. Or, you know,
or steal another car.
something
stopped him before.
Yeah, well, that's basically what he ended up doing with this lady in the bathroom. Was it was a very intense scene because she tries to prop the door open with this rock,
yeah.
So that there a light can be shown through, and then all of a sudden, like as she's sitting in the stall, the door to the outside shuts.
Yeah,
and she. Automatically, the music and everything kind of changes tone. You still hear the little girl singing and, you know, all that stuff. But then all of a sudden, you see her purse that's on her floor get snatched up.
Yep.
And Michael steals the keys and he throws the bag down. But the mom, like, she's looking out the crack and you can see Michael's mask.
Just throw it down. That asshole scattered the contents of the purse across the lawn.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
The keys were right on top. He was just being a dick.
Yeah, what an asshole. But the thing was, like, so Michael could have murdered a lot of people. He could have murdered this kid. He could have done everything. Like, there's nobody there. Like, he just decided I'm just going to, like, he was on a mission to get from point A to point B, and, you know, that was it. Like,
but that all has to do with character inconsistencies on him. That's really all that is, character inconsistencies. Because in one movie, he'll be slaughtering everything with a pulse, and then another one, like this one, he's a little more particular about who he's picking
on. Well, because he didn't kill Ronnie either. He just kept looking in the window like a creep, and then just, you know, staring at the back of his bald head, and that was it.
He had a couple of opportunities to kill Ronnie, and he didn't.
Yeah. There's nobody around Ronnie. It's just Ronnie.
Right.
He was on the phone with his girlfriend, but that was about it. And then, like, all the stuff with, like, so back with the mom. So he ends up taking off. And my thing was, so this was from Illinois to California, right?
Okay, so this is what I'm talking about. We mapped this out.
And I'm glad that you guys did because I did as well. And it drove me bananas.
Langdon, Illinois is not a real place. Neither is Haddonfield. They're both made up. So we kind of found a ballpark town. I think it was like Langdon Park, something like Willamette, Illinois. And I was like, all right, we'll go with that one. And then we got the idea that Spring Glen, California, is also not a real place, but it was Northern California. So we picked a town that was sort of kind of liked it. So we mapped it from Willamette, Illinois, to Chico, California, which was a very similar. Town
there,
to what Spring Glen was shown in there. Okay, cool. It ended up being over 2,000 miles. When he broke into Marion's house, it was at dusk on October 29th. He arrived in Spring Glen on October 31st. The drive to get from Willamette to Chico was one day, 16 hours. So 40 hours if you drive straight through. No bathroom breaks, no nothing. So, yes, theoretically, he could have made it there on time. However, we don't know how long he was broken down at that rest stop, how far outside of town that rest stop was, if it stops for gas. Did he stop for gas anywhere?
I remember us driving from Florida to Massachusetts, and I've had to, and we were in a Ford Focus. And
we still had to stop for gas, like, at least three separate times.
And
so, he was in an old Beater.
Yeah, and I was like, and that was, it wasn't even a Beater, it was just a classic car. And I mean,
what was he getting, though, 10 miles to the gallon?
That's what I'm saying. I was like, those things suck a lot more gas than what the Ford Focus did. But then it was just like, and I was more surprised that there wasn't an engine problem, or he just ran out of gas and then maybe, like, stole, like, somebody else's, you know, car on the way the way up. But it was just like,
so it's basically a 40-hour drive without stops. So, gas, and we don't know how long he was broken down. So, somehow he managed to make it to...
And on top of that,
Spring Glen on top.
Do you think that while he was driving in his car, he decided to take his mask off?
Like, I don't know, because that's like his security blanket. So I actually kind of think that he probably just kept wearing it.
And you know, another thing too, that, like, what do you think the smell would be like?
I don't want to think about it.
In the mask.
It probably, well, I mean, it's a latex mask. So initially, it probably smells like a condom when he puts it on.
And no, but I mean, if it's like well worn, it's like, that's just.
Well, yeah. Eventually, you figure, okay, he's had that fucking thing for 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, I remember like listening to like interviews of like Corey Taylor and Clown from Slipknot talk about
how gross.
Yeah, just like yeah. I mean, they would just live in those masks, and it was just the absolute, like, there's times where like the mask would like make Clown sick to where he had to like throw up and stuff.
You would
puke, like,
in the mask.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. So I was like, oh, okay. But, like, also, like, another little fun thing that I always like to, it's just, when I talk about, like, with my kids and stuff like that, it's like, I'm really big into Pokemon. It's like, we always have, like, those little fun little comments where it's like, you know, oh, like, what meat does Ash and the group eat when they do eat? It's like, what Pokemon are they eating? Because, like, there's no real live animals. Well,
I mean, they're all animals, but they're not, no one's, eating them, apparently.
Yeah, it's like, so, like, what are they eating when they are eating meat? But, same, you know, going back to, like, Michael and stuff like that, it's, I always like the thing, it's like, in every movie, we never see Michael eat anything. He never takes in any type of nutrients, never takes any water, no nothing. He is just the killing machine, and that's it.
Yep.
There's nothing. So, on this big road trip, do you think he, like, stopped off for, like, Fritos or, like, corn chips or, you know, like, what do you think Michael would be
That's
eating?
That's the thing is, like, everybody stops for road snacks. You figure you'd pull into a Wawa at some point.
I mean, like, how long did you say it was? It was, like,
about 40 hours if you drive straight through.
40-hour trip. I mean, in a car. I mean, his ass would have been fucking sore as shit.
Yep.
I mean, it's just, like, I mean, again.
My ass hurts just thinking about it.
Yeah, but that was the thing was, like, it was just a... It was just thinking of that long road trip and not having to stop for gas, not having to, again, eat or, you know, make sure that he's okay.
Go as to the
bathroom, whatever it is. I mean, all the typical shit that random, you know, jabronis have to do.
Yeah,
and
the
then,
rest of us, poor fuckers.
Yeah, but then that whole scene where he ends up stealing the and first off, it's like, what fucking woman is driving a fucking jalopy like that in this day and age? Or at least in that day and age, where it's like...
Well, I mean, even then, that car was 4 years old, even then.
Yeah, I was like, I was expecting, like, Michael would have to go out there with a goddamn crank and just... And wind that shit up. But, like, when he actually... I did enjoy, though, where he ended up... Like, in the 78 film, where he had the station wagon. And anytime you saw the station wagon, you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Well, in this one, it's
Marion's,
like,
first car.
Yeah, and then like when you see, but the only problem is like when you saw this jalopy, it was just like, oh man, like oh he's here, and then you're just kind of like, it just looks goofy. It just doesn't. There's nothing threatening. It's just like, it's a little. I mean, same thing with like the station wagon. You're like, oh, there's Michael. It's like it's a soccer mom car. It's like, it doesn't feel like it's a scary thing.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, when he does pull up to the main gate and he gets out in the most fucking ninja way I've ever seen.
Right.
And then Ronnie, like a dumbass, goes out there, opens the gate, looks in the empty vehicle that's still running, and then Michael, you know, creeps up behind him and walks his happy ass in.
You know what?
It's really, like, oh, like, this is, it's just fucking weird.
You know what's really funny, too, is he, I think the battery died in the car right there.
Yeah, because it just,
because the light, you see the lights just shut off.
Yeah.
So he made it just in the nick of time for the, because the lights weren't on long enough with no one in it for the car to just die.
Or it just ran out of gas. Like, he just made it with enough gas there.
Something. But I'm like, wait, did he hit the clicker?
Yeah. Whoop, whoop. But yeah, I was just like, man, like, that whole thing with the car, it's just, again, it's the why, it's the how of just when did he learn, but then it's all the stuff with the Miriam and just finding out all of Lori's new information and then pinpointing on exactly where she is. There was a couple of cool scenes where after he did get inside the school and he's like outside of the or he's outside of the gate and he's like doing his like creepy, you know, stalker looking in the, you know, I think it was what Molly saw him while they were talking about Frankenstein.
Yeah, Molly saw him outside the
like
window.
Stuff like that. Again, neat. I love when he's doing his shape thing. I love it. You know, just being all creepy and off in the distance and then leaves. But it's just really funny how quick that fucker is. I mean, because he'll be there and then it's just
teleportation power, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, that stuff like that was, you know, it was just really funny. But, I mean, I don't know if there's any, I'm trying to think of back anything else that we haven't covered. I mean, we got Will, we talked about him.
I feel like we got pretty much everything.
I mean, there's not a ton to talk about, but
no,
it's just,
I do want to say though that I might just be because I'm just not feeling well, so I feel like we need to wrap this up anyway.
The struggle is real over there.
I'm struggling so hard right now. Like, I'm trying to make this entertaining, but I'm like, poof.
Nope.
So nowhere near as entertaining as last week's.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Anyway, overall, I do like this. I think this was a much better movie than the last three we had watched. I feel like getting Lori back was a huge, like, it was a good thing to get Jamie Lee Curtis to come back and put Lori back in the movie. I liked the overall overarching idea of, all right, Michael's coming back for his sister. It's a whole mission thing. And compared to the last couple of movies, like, Michael had his mission and he stuck to it all the way through to the end. And it was really just anybody who got in his way were the ones that got it. So it's whoever really crossed his path. Like, he didn't necessarily go out seeking anybody, which is why the mom and the daughter didn't get killed the rest of, because it was just, I just need to steal their car so they can live. That's why, I think part of the reason too is he was grossly outnumbered before the entire school left for Yosemite. But
and also, how awesome was it that all the kids were getting on the bus in, like, probably in the afternoon, and then when they were leaving, it was fucking almost night.
Yeah, there was a time issue here, because it was the same thing in the beginning with Jimmy going into Marion's house. He went into the, when he went to the house, it was late afternoon. It was pretty bright out.
Yeah.
And he's just poking around for, it can't have been more than 5 minutes, poking around, and he comes back out, and it's not dusk, it is dark. The sun has gone down and completely set. I'm like, was he in there for 2.5 hours? What the fuck was he doing? So there were some time issues with this movie. But overall, I do feel like this was a step up from what there was, from the prior three. I do feel like this is a fairly successful attempt at getting the franchise back on track, which they would very quickly derail again in the next movie, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. The acting was really good. I can't necessarily point to any one character or actor where I just was like, ooh, cringy. No, they all did great, especially Josh Hartnett, this was his first film role. This was his very first role. And then later on that year, he would go to do Faculty.
Which was awesome.
Which was also awesome.
Which I actually kicked myself that I'd be a sci-fi nerd. I'm like, oh my god, I haven't never saw that.
Yeah, we did that episode a couple years ago. Go back and listen to it. We were both like, why did we sleep on this?
I was like, shit, I'm going to have to go own this. Like,
yep. The Mask. Not better, but still not great. Especially the CGI mask in the kitchen when he confronts Charlie. That was pretty bad.
Yeah, it's really bad.
That was rough. I was like, what is that? Why is the computer gen? That looks so terrible. I think that was a pickup shot.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, they just didn't have the mask, or they didn't have the right mask. So they animated one onto his face.
Yeah, that was bad.
Choices were made. The special effects were not great. This one wasn't... There was a bit of blood, but... It wasn't crazy gory. I think the goriest kill in this was Sarah, where after he, like, she tried to escape through the dumbwaiter, but he cut the rope on it and it crushed her leg, which was pretty gross. And then when he finally did get her, he stabbed her a few times, but then he turned her once again. The apex decorator has struck, and he turned her into a light fixture. So she was dangling from a cord in the ceiling with her chest hollowed out and a light bulb. She could get plugged in.
I mean, the fact that he had that much time to decorate like that. But
there was
like
no,
like...
step stool in sight. There was no reason for any of this to work. It looked cool. Did it make sense? Nope. No, not really, no.
It's another one of those.
It's like, that looks great. Why? The story was decent. I thought that, again, bringing Laurie back was a good choice, especially because this was the anniversary installment of the series. Again, it looked like this could go either way. Is it going to be a hit or is it going to fail? Overall, I did enjoy this one quite a lot. I enjoyed it a whole lot better. The kills were a bit more creative, at least a couple of them. Otherwise, they were throwback kills, like Will getting stabbed with the chef's knife. It was a callback to the second movie with the nurse. As far as skull rating goes, this was a 3.8. It was a well-done movie. There were some problems. But it looked good. It functioned well. The story was... I don't want to say it was fairly solid, but if you turn your brain off, you can enjoy this just fine. I think it was mostly that. I do like it. I do like this one. This is kind of towards the top of the heap for me. This is what I definitely will probably rewatch occasionally when the mood strikes. Probably alone because my boyfriend had some issues with it. So the end of the movie. I first tell you this part of the story. So for the last couple of films, Curtis has been screaming, why doesn't someone just cut his head off? And I'm sitting here smirking because I know what's coming.
Has he never seen it?
He's not seen it.
Oh, okay.
This was the first time he had seen it. So, and I'm smirking because I'm like, yeah, someone really needs to cut his head off. Try not to look him in the eye. So we finally get to the end of the movie. Laurie does that, you know,
She does the whole thing.
Yeah, she steals the gun from the cop. Runs off with the van with Michael's body in it, and eventually she has him pinned, and she takes a swing with the fireman's axe, cuts his head off. And just a reminder, the fire axes aren't as sharp as like a wood cutting axe. They tend to be more for like blunt force trauma, where you're trying to beat a door in or windows or what have you. They're not really meant to cut. It's more to, like, just bash. But so she was so pissed and so ragey and so righteous in her anger, she managed to take a fire axe and lop his fucking head off.
With one swing.
With one... With the fury of the gods behind her. So Curtis is cheering. He's like, finally, someone fucking did it. And I was like, yeah, someone finally fucking did it. until the sequel. And he's like, there's another one? And I'm like, yeah. Yep, there's another one that came out 4 years after this one. And he's like, wait, what? And then I had to explain to him why the studio decided, did the ending that they did, just in case they didn't feel like sticking the landing on it. And then I showed him the opening, like, 5 or 7 minutes of Resurrection. He got real mad. He was pissed. Because he's like, what the fuck did we go through all of that for? I was like, the bait and switch, because studio fuckery.
Did you get to the Laurie thing?
A little bit of it, but I was like, yeah.
You're going to save it for later?
We're going to save it for next week. We have to watch it next week. And he's like, I almost wish you didn't show me that, because now I'm not watching that movie with you. And I'm like, oh. I was like, but Busta Rhymes is stupid and entertaining.
There's Kung Fu.
He just got so cranky about it. So cranky. It was really funny. But I gave this one a 3.8. I would watch this one again. This is definitely one of the better ones in the series, even though the bar is a tripping hazard in hell. That's how low it is. This is still one of the better movies in the series. It's one of the more coherent, the better acted. There's nobody, even though the kids are not much, at least none of them are insufferable. None of them are, you're not rooting for any of them to die. You just don't care if they die. But yeah, it's a 90s slasher Scream-flavored horror movie. It is what it is.
So, surprise, surprise, Lunchbox is on the complete and opposite end of that spectrum.
I'm waiting for one that you actually like.
Me too! This is bullshit. We watched one bad movie. Maybe two. We did that B-movie hold thing a while back ago. Those were fun. But so go back and listen to those episodes. But this is bullshit. I was like, the fact that I made you watch Jaws of Revenge one movie that was really, really bad. Now I'm watching. It's like it's weeks. I want a good movie. I absolutely.
It's coming. It's coming.
Did not like this movie, and I actually went back and I listened to our Jaws ranking. I wish we could do that. Our Halloween ranking, and I had the same feeling as I did the first time. And granted, this movie has a few things, like the acting, great. Like, I was with the acting. I can enjoy it. It's great. The story absolutely bored me. This movie, for me, as you like to say, caused the ultimate sin of being a boring movie.
Yeah, that is the cardinal sin. Yeah. Yep.
So, for me, if you notice throughout this whole little review, for this episode, I did not mention a kill.
No.
Except for Joseph Gordon-Levitt's skate to the face.
Yeah.
Because that was an awesome kill. Every other kill was off camera. There was not one kill.
That was off camera too. You just saw the aftermath.
That's what I'm saying. But the aftermath of it was right there in your face. It was gory. And then you got the kill of, like, the slit throat of Marion. So
which
everything
was not great.
No, it was not a great little take. But at the same time, it was intense because the cops were there. She was trying to get out. There was a struggle. She was the mouse caught in a trap with the cat.
Yeah.
So, like, that whole scene was I liked. The opening stuff was great. And then once you got into the whole story of, like, him having to travel all the way out there, not killing the mom in the bathroom, and then making it to the school, not killing Ronnie, and then getting into the school, and then, you know, kind of creeping around, doing all this stuff. And then when he finally gets to the four main kids, and he ends up killing the kid in the bathroom looking for the courtroom, Did he just slit his throat and throw him in the dumbwaiter?
He cut his throat with a corkscrew.
Okay, that I was happy about that because I was like, if he did not use that corkscrew in some shape or form, I was going to be very upset. But it was
he cut his throat with a corkscrew.
Yeah, just the fact that he cut the throat with a corkscrew, threw him in the dumbwaiter, and then the girl had to find him and do all that rushing around. I will say that scene where she's trying to get away in the dumbwaiter and he cuts the line and breaks her foot and stuff like that. Okay, that good intensity. However, that aftermath when he cuts a hole in her chest and hangs her up by the light fixture, it's like, again, it's like it's an off-screen kill. You don't see anything. It's like there's a lot of stuff that I want in there. So it was just very boring to me. And then all the stuff with Lori and Michael, where the whole thing, like, that it really took me out of it is when he, like, that scene that you liked where he came down, you know, one arm, you know, total, like.
It just looks cool.
Yeah, you know, it's
the logistics are stupid.
No, I had the same reaction that your boy did where I was just like, what the ever-loving fuck? Like, that makes no sense that he would do that. And it's just the whole premise of them running around this empty school and her, like, trying to... It's like, I don't even know exactly what she was planning to really do.
She just was going to kill him.
No, but it's just like, she was walking... Like, at first, like, she had the axe. And, or no, like, after, like, she told John to fuck off... And go get help. She came back in with the axe, and it's like. But then, like, she automatically started going under tables, and there was no defense. It was a scurry and run. Yeah. And then, like, she lost the axe, and it was just like, what the fuck are you gonna do? It's like you just.
She didn't lose it. She ditched it.
No. it was like the whole thing of like what. What is your ultimate plan if you, like, are trying to survive and you're going to go back into the fire?
With nothing.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
It's like, that is not a survival girl. Like, that's not someone that I'm rooting as a, okay, you're playing the smart, you're doing what you're supposed to do. Like, this is your school and you should know. Yet you went into the areas that are... Basically, it's going to be it's his high ground.
Yeah, no, she definitely put herself on the defensive for sure. This is not Lori's shining moment. She did come out the winner in the end, and I did like that she kind of pulled herself up and managed to get her shit together and take care of business. But there were some critical errors there, and Michael didn't get any hits in on her though.
Nope.
She kicked his ass.
Well, and that was another thing, too, was, like, so he... There was a couple times where he almost got her. But then there was the one scene where, like, he gets knocked off of the balcony and lands on a table. And then she drops the knife and then walks away. And, like, she kind of has, like, this freak-out moment. And I'm like, no, don't do that 78 thing that you did. Mm. It's like, you go down there, you double tap, you make sure that fucker's dead, and then that's when, you know, Ronnie shows up.
She was going to.
Yeah. No, but that was fine. Like, but I was, a little part of me was like, oh, don't do that. Don't you do what you did before. and that was something where the fact that Michael could take a bunch of bullets, he can be lit on fire, well... At this point, he wasn't lit on fire, I guess, right?
So, he was. We just dropped that detail.
I guess. I don't know. So, but he could take a lot of bullets from Loomis, and he can take a lot of punishment. He took a fire extinguisher to the back of the head. He took, I think he was stabbed at one point.
He was stabbed a bunch. I mean, yeah. I went over all of the ways he was the attempted murderer.
Yeah, but a fall... From a balcony onto a table like a fucking Dudley boy, just came in and that knocked him clean the fuck out.
Yes.
To where Ronnie goes, oh no, he's dead. And when the police and the paramedics show up, they put him in a body bag. He's not breathing. He's not, like, they check him and they say, oh, nope, he's dead. And they zip him up.
Yep.
from a fall from a balcony.
Yep.
That's bullshit.
Well, like, they don't know that.
No, but even then, I was like, it was so unbelievable that that would be what was happening.
Well, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know? No, I agree.
And that's where, like, and that's just from a viewer's perspective, knowing that, oh, it's like, okay, like, clearly Michael's getting up at some point. And when, you know, Carrie ends up taking the fucking van away from the police, and she's pointing a gun on top of
she
that.
She stole a cop's gun and then pointed it at him.
Yeah, she's pointed at everybody. And I'm like, I am sorry to say, in this day and age, or even in that day and age, the other cops are fucking blasting. I'm sorry. Uh-huh. When you steal a cop's gun, that's a big no-no.
Yeah, no, they pretty much shoot on sight.
Yeah, like, that would not fly.
Oh, yeah, they're not just gonna be like, well, let's see what happens.
Yeah, and then, like, after she, like, fucking takes off, no one chases her. There's no high-speed chase. Nothing. They're just like, oh, I guess she's gone. Like, you know, like,
where did she go? She must have left the stove on.
That rascal. But she, the end scene where she ends up wrecking the, like, so Michael wakes up and he gets out and he goes to you know, get at her. And then she gets the big bright idea to fucking slam on the brakes and send him out the front of the window. I was like, all right, I'm fucking in. Let's go. Let's see where this, like, let's see how smarty smart you can be.
And then she tried to run him down with a van,
which is cool. Again,
causing a massive wreck.
Yeah, and I don't think she was thrown out, but I think she jumped out of. Did she open up the door and she rolled out?
She rolled the van, and I think she managed to crawl out of it. And I don't think she was thrown from it.
Okay, I thought she was thrown from it. And that's why she was able to. To survive.
She rolled the van.
Now, the thing of, like, having Michael pinned under, like, on the vehicle, there'd be no way that he could get out. So, I was like, okay, this is cool. And then when they got, you know, we got the head cut off thing, I was like, all right, great. Now, on top of that, it's like, me knowing how H2 ended with the guns in the eyes and the fucking burn, and we know the whole deal that I have a problem with.
Yep.
I was like, I automatically had this thing where I was like, he's fucking coming back again. I was like, they're gonna bring his ass back somehow, and lo and behold,
they did.
We got resurrection.
You know, it was really funny. I don't know if you noticed this, but this was funny. Kurtz pointed out to me. He's like, hey, when did Michael become Asian? I was like, what? He's like, look at his eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
He went from blue-eyed to brown-eyed, which I guess was supposed to be the red flag or something. But I'm like, huh, well, I'll be damned. He looked a little Asian under there.
So, one other thing that really, really annoyed me before I got it, get it, my skull rating here, because I have yet to give that. Josh Hartnett's fucking haircut. For the love of God, my guy. LL Cool J even told you to fucking fix your hair.
Yeah.
And you did not a damn thing. And you know, the one scene that drove me fucking bananas is that they were in town, and when Carrie stops him in the middle of the street and they fucking have their big argument, you can see a goddamn barbershop right behind him. Fucking go get your shit fixed, kid. Like, I was, like, the whole time, I could
and
not
as a
stop.
Barber? I was vindicated.
And on top of that, you can see in that picture that's on Carrie's desk, it's the same fucking fucked up hair.
Yep.
It's like this kid had a no chance. Unless Carrie's cutting his hair for him, because she won't let him go anywhere else. But it was just like, come the fuck on. That drove me nuts. And then, like, all the shit in the faculty, it was the same, as you said. It was, like, same goddamn thing. And it was just really funny. But, like, I even told you, I was like, I want to see if your boy will pick up on that, where it's like, there's a barbershop literally, like, right behind him. It's
oh,
like,
no, he was seeing red at that point. He didn't see much else.
But I was just like, oh, my God. I was like, the whole time, that's all I could fucking see on him. Even though Josh did a great job,
It was distracting.
It was just funny. It was just like, oh,
so
my God.
So what's your skull rating, man?
I'm going to give this one... This one's a... It's a 1.2.
Bananas.
It is low. I do not like this film. I do not really care to watch this film again. And I think this is on the same level as, I think, either 4 or 5. I like 6 better. That says a lot.
I'm offended.
And the reason why, the big reason why, is because H2O bored me. I didn't.
Yeah, okay.
That was the kicker, was that I was just bored throughout the movie. There were some parts where I'm like, okay, I'm with it, but it was just boring.
Okay, that's
and
fair.
And with six, even though it's like, yeah, it's the Cult of Thorn and the weird, funky, fucked up, you know, story from time to time, I was like, there was more gore, there was more kills that were on screen to be had, and then compared to this film, and then the mask I actually liked way better in 6 than I did for H2O. Like, even though like 6 was a little still off, there was a little bit of like a grunge to it. It was, you know, it almost had that like kind of feeling that Rob Zombie's mask had, where it was just dingy and beaten up and worn in and stuff like that. So, like, that was something like that. I mean, the Michael, I didn't mind too much in this film. He was still the shape, and I liked that there was the creepiness, but there were a lot of things that he did that it just didn't make sense. It was, and again, even then, he was just boring. Like the stuff where like he's creeping around Ronnie's little shack thing, I was like, that was cool, but I was waiting for something to happen.
Yeah.
The best scene for me was the opening scene with Miriam. I was like, I want, if I got more of that in the film,
yep,
we fucking have something. I was like, that was cool, but it was just boring. It was just, I mean, it was just like when LL Cool J's weird novel reading was.
Oh, that was, you know, just comedic relief.
No, but that was like when that's like one of the parts that that's like I actually enjoy. Then, and that's kind of like, that's a problem. It's like,
all right, well, yeah.
So it's, you had a 3.8, which is fairly high, and I had a 1.2. What did I say? 1.2, 1.3?
1.2.
So
that's
so bad.
That's it for Halloween Water.
And for the love of God, I need a movie that I like. I need something that I like. I don't want to feel like I'm being like a Debbie Downer the whole goddamn time. And I'm sorry for anybody that's named Debbie, but it's just, Jesus Christ, I need something.
Well, I can't promise what next week will bring. Next week is Halloween Resurrection. So you might have a sick good time with it. I don't know.
We'll see.
I can't read your mind.
And that's the thing, is I am trying to be hopeful. I'm trying to enjoy these movies. I'm trying to take it from a different light. But it's just, when that shit hits the fan, it's just like, I just snap, and it gets right back into this, like, oh, that's the reason why I don't like it. That is why no one can change my fucking mind. It's like, I'll sit down at a booth and just with the Change My Mind logo in the front, just like Steven Crowder, and just like, tell me why Michael Myers, like, you know, like, come on, I need this, because I need the merch. Like, for the love of God, I need the merch. Like, I went to Spirit Halloween the other day, and I was just like, God damn it, it's so good. Like,
you want to like it because you want the merch.
But yet, I went and got a whole bunch of Killer Clowns from Outer Space stuff, because it's awesome.
That's adulting.
It's so good.
All right, everybody. So, hit that subscribe button, and we'll drop your favorite podcatcher next Tuesday with Halloween Resurrection. You can join us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Slasher, at Creepin' It Real. You can email us at creepinitreal.cm@gmail.com with movie ideas or what have you. If you like us a whole bunch, we have a Redbubble page. You can get our merch at creepinitreal.redbubble.com, or hit the link in the Instagram bio. All of our designs are done by Lunchbox.
Mm-hmm.
They're unique to us, and you can get them on pretty much whatever you want.
You
want to
know what's really cool that I just saw? Like, I was on Redbubble the other day. They have like these like mats now. They have one that's shaped in like, it's a dog bone shape, and they have a fish shape. It's like they call it the cat mat. I was like, oh, so it's
like the food dish mats.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, I was like, so you can get Lunchbox artwork on a fucking dog mat now. I'm like, that's cool as shit. On top of like bath mats and shower curtains and pillows and
watch out, Pete, you're getting new accessories.
Oh my God, I can't wait. This is gonna be so cool. All right.
Well, in the meantime, I'm Mr. Smeg.
I am that good buddy, Lunchbox. And I promise you guys, I will try to like a movie at some point.